Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
We're back with another episode of Mouthing Off, the theater arts and culture podcast for the Twin Cities and beyond. I'm Kevin Couchman. We have the full house here. We have Michael Venske, Mari Sittner, Amanda Forstrom. We're coming in hot, coming in strong. It's June. Okay. June is the month of the Sacred Heart in my house. It's also Pride Month. And we're really excited to bring you another episode. First, let's just go around. Let's start with the guest. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing well. However, I'm realizing now that the room I'm in it's an enclosed room and it's warm in here. There's no air movement. I haven't turned my air on yet. You know, but
go and do that if you need to.
Oh, goodness,
we've got, yeah.
Those dad sensibilities where it's going to be 102 degrees and I'll think about turning it on.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Right.
But I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm a father as well. And, you know, fatherhood will take you from the Aristotelian to the Platonic, where you have you're anchored in reality, and then suddenly everything becomes conceptual. Does that make any sense?
Do you like that? Do you like that? Do you like seeing the world like this now?
I've always seen the world sort of that way. Yeah. I'm an oddball, unfortunately studied philosophy, if that's not obvious. let's go around too. So, Mari, how are you? Mari's in New York City.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Got a little bit of a summer cold. Also have no air conditioning on yet, because those Con Ed bills are going way up. But I think no air conditioning, open window, I think that's the vibe for the summer. It's very European,
yeah,
sophisticated.
And I like cheap. That. That's right. It's very, yeah, yeah. So like the Strait of Hormuz is closed, so Mari can't run her air conditioner.
So the windows are open.
Is that why they
closed
it?
We're all forced to be one with nature this summer. Blessing in disguise.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful in New York City too. Just the odors, the smell of the bodega cat wafting up from the street is lovely. Yeah, like your Mari's European summer. Let's go back around. Amanda, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We're putting Michael in the hot seat, so to speak, and I guess Mari's in a hot seat as well. So I'm excited for this episode. It's been a while, but Michael is the reason that we're on this show. So first
That's
of all,
right.
Thank you, Michael. And it's exciting to kind of come full circle.
I'm really happy that you have a place to broadcast what you do. You know what I mean? Like, I think that the having on our program, on our network, WFNU, it really is a diverse group of community programmers. And community is kind of what we're all about, you know? And especially, like, given the state of the world and so forth, it's nice to be able to elevate voices, bring people together, and share the things that we're passionate about. So I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. I'm happy to help push you toward doing it.
Yeah, we've been doing it a while now too. And of course we're talking about 94.1 Frogtown Radio in here in beautiful historic St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yeah, it's one of the most diverse neighborhoods in the Twin Cities. Frogtown has representation from pretty much every makeup in the Twin Cities is right here in Frogtown. So it's a very special place, and it's an honor to be, I don't know, be one of the
Sure.
voices on the air with everyone else.
Yeah. I mean, and why don't we start there? I mean, you're on the board. You're the reason that we're on the 94.1. So, why don't we just reiterate for people sort of like what it is, just real quick, what the mission is, why, how did you end up on the board, sort of the whole origin story there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The real quick take or hot take is after COVID, I had been working remote for a while and I was wanting to get more involved in the community. I was already volunteering as a an elections judge with Ramsey County, and we only do elections, every so often, right? So I was like, what more could I be doing? And I don't know if I Googled volunteer opportunities or and how it kind of came to be, but I was like clicking around on the internet looking for other nonprofit groups that I think would mesh well with me and them, have a good relationship kind of thing. And I sent a message to the station about volunteering, and I was thinking like emptying the waste paper basket or sweeping the floors, like I came up in the at Dudley Riggs at Brave New Workshop, and I started there as an intern, sweeping the floors, not and in exchange for doing so, I took classes. And that's how I came up, working my way and just being a part of wanting to be a part of something from kind of the ground up, just so you know how it operates and you have a good understanding of the place. And I came into the station and I met with Philip. He responded right away and he was like, "Do you want to come in and see the place and talk?" And I was like, "I'm not. I work from home, man. I'm not appropriate to be in public. It's been a while." And he invited me in, and I was wearing basketball shorts, and we chatted, and we talked kind of concepts, like ideas about community, about what it means to serve others, and he really, I think, dug what I was sharing, and we just. Philip's such a great guy to begin with. Like he's kind of a connector of people, and he said, "Well, why don't you come to one of our board meetings and share some of the ideas that you have about community?" And that was in, I believe, 2022. So it's been a few years now, and the organization has continued to grow. We've had some down years, but as a whole, like. Anyone who has an idea for a program, if you're listening to this program right now and you have something that you're kicking around, like, let's connect. This is the space for it.
And on that note, where can people find you to connect?
Well, you can learn more about the station at WFNU.org.
Excellent.
WFNU.org. Easy
Right. And
peasy.
we're happy to be connectors too. We're at
Yeah.
badmouthtc@gmail.com. And if you hit us up, we'll make the connection happen. And of course, we're always looking for guests too. Go on, Amanda.
No, I was going to follow up with the question about the origin story of your WFNU Frogtown radio show called Your Funeral Music. So, can you tell us a little bit about the idea behind that, the inspiration, and how many episodes you have done?
Yeah, so grief, death, it impacts us all. Like it's just it whether you want to think about it as like the elephant in the room, but it is kind of ever present in our lives as just a concept. Like, we are alive one day, we won't be kind of a thing. So there's that. And for a long time, I've been thinking about like this that concept. grief and also the juxtaposition between as a performer, someone who goes in front of people and, you know, says words or songs or whatever, like the idea of people being more afraid of speaking in public than death. Like, I felt like there was something there to kind of explore, and not as a radio program, as a play, as a theatrical endeavor kind of a thing. And in 2017, I had grandparents pass away, and kind of in quick succession. And I had, I grew up next door to my grandparents, so I had a very tight bond with them. Mm-hmm. And during, my grandfather died abruptly, and all of a sudden I was like, whoa, that just happened. That's, now we're done. And there is no more. And, or I guess my feelings have changed a little bit since that time. But, and then when my grandmother was in hospice, and as a family, we were, we went from basic, you know, the expression from soup to nuts, you know, we went from like being at the hospital with the doctor, talking about a plan, and the doctor at the time, he was referring to himself as Dr. Feel Good, and he was going to take the pain away, blah, blah, blah. And he's talking about hospice, of course, but referring to himself in the third person as Dr. Feel Good was really an uncomfortable thing to bear witness to. But then we went to hospice, and we were together for those 10 days. And it was a transformative experience for myself and for my grandmother and for other people who were there, I'm sure. But every day that I'd go to hospice, it was in Waconia, Minnesota, so west of the Twin Cities, about 45 minutes, an hour. During the drive out to hospice, it would be the crying time, the time for the ugly crying with the sad music in the car to like get the sad out. And then being present in hospice and with grandma and having memories and conversation and those kind of things without any big emotions. And then on the hour-long drive back, you know, the sad again. And trying to think on a few years later about that experience and how to how can I get better with grief? If this is going to keep happening, if this is going to continue to impact the people in my life who I care about, how can I get better at dealing with it? So I was, in conjunction with this wanting to write this play, this theatrical experience, I started talking to Philip about death. Philip's an older man, and I thought he would have some wisdom to share with me. And he was like, well, you should do a show about this. And I was like, I don't know. Who wants to tune in to some morbid? No, I don't know. But we kept kind of kicking around ideas. And funeral music just kind of came up. It seemed like a really a simple way to connect like a big topic and go a bunch of different directions with it, because everyone has a different idea about either death, like the afterlife, does it exist, does it not exist, you know, it's totally whatever you want to talk about, whatever you want to make it. And then of course everyone's songs are different too, and people have different ideas about what the music should be. Should it be for them sharing a message of hope for other people, or should it be a story about their life? Or so it's been an interesting experience getting to help both like facilitate the conversation, and at the heart of it, it's ultimately supposed to be for the family of the guest, and not because, oh, here's mom's wishes, but oh, here's mom's voice, and then the entire backstory about why it's a Brooks and Dunn song or something like that. You know, like you have all of the all of the emotion that comes up as people are talking too. Like, I think that's really powerful to be impacted. And when you're in the radio, right, like it's just the voice, it's what it's all about, that voice. So getting to sit with people and listen as they share their heart and their big like thoughts on death, it's it became like almost an exercise, like a creative exercise kind of thing. Like, could I do this? Could I sit down and make a list of songs? And now it's like a like kind of like a, you know, you facilitate something, like it's an honor to go through it with them and help them figure out what they're trying to say. And then at the end of the process, the moment the person has finalized their list, then they're like, oh, well, now I have other songs to add to it, or this song has to go. So it like, it's also a thing that continues to grow and change for folks.
Could my playlist be 24 hours long?
Yeah, I mean, like
I want like a Viking funeral. Even though I'm Roman Catholic, I want to be put into a boat, put into a like a pontoon, and cast onto the Mississippi River and set aflame to the sound of Tool's Anima. Go on, Mari.
I was just about to say your 24-hour playlist would just be nothing but Tool and Cocteau Twins.
It'd be Ulver too. I really like Ulver. If you've never heard of them, I love this idea of this show. I think it's just fantastic. I'm personally devoted. I mean, my other show is Art of Darkness, and we cover the lives of dead artists. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, and I find that show ends up becoming a bit of like a seance almost, you know. Oh. you start communing, not to be woo woo, but you know,
I'm pro that around this time of the full moon.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, but you commune with the life of somebody. But in any event, that's a great franchise for a show. I think that's a fantastic idea, Michael. Go ahead, Maury.
I'm curious, Michael. I mean, I'm sure you've spoken to many people, but have you heard any perspectives or taken away any perspectives that have changed the way that you live or that you think about death personally?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And in a bunch of ways. So there's some like philosophical, like mindful, being aware of the present moment kind of things. But then other things like, what is the frequency of the afterlife? What is the, oh gosh, I never thought about that. One of the guests was a DJ, and one of his first songs was like an electronic kind of track he made, and he's like, this is what I imagine it sounds like to be dead, and this, or the afterlife or whatever. And then also hearing from people like the afterlife or is exactly what you think it is. So if you think it's heaven and your whole family's there and everyone's dressed in white and God is a big man with a beard or whatever, a sky Santa or whatever they say, a sky daddy. I'm sorry, Christians. I don't know. But it's whatever you
I want a sky daddy so bad. don't we all? Yeah, that's fascinating. Has anybody ever like broken down and wept on the show?
Yeah. But the deal about the program. The program is, it's pre-recorded, much like this program, and it's pre-recorded because the show takes as long as it takes to do. So like we have time here, we've dedicated time for the show. But because the subject matter is what it is, and if individuals, and now I'm not a counselor, I'm not a therapist at all, or have any background in that, other than being a patient of a therapist, many therapists for many years. But I don't have any background in this. But what I've seen is that if anyone has unresolved grief or unresolved trauma, that is going to be in the way of getting through the thing that they have to say. So, yes, people have cried, and tears are great. Tears are a great healing thing. Different from like when you poke your eye and your eye wells up, it waters up, and those tears are to flush the eye. But tears of grief are actually healing, and they're the chemical compounds are supposed to calm us down. Again, not a doctor, but you can look this up. It's science. But yeah, people have broken down, and it's just creating that. It's just like in the rehearsal room, right? It's creating a safe space, giving people the time and the space and respect to process what they're going through in the moment, and supporting them and being there with them and not judging them for it, you know, just being with them in community. And
there's a Buddhist practice of meditating, I think, on like a dead dog on the side of the road, and just sort of thinking about decomposition. And you're doing a similar thing here, where, you know, because our culture will do just anything to avoid thinking about this.
It didn't used to be that way. It changed after the Civil War. Before that, home funerals were really, really very standard and normal. But after, as a result of the Civil War and their families wanting their loved ones to be sent home, they needed to be preserved. So there was a rise in the funeral industry and embalming, that kind of thing. So their loved ones could be transported back home. And it's at that time where that shift of, instead of doing it at home with being in the parlor, right? The parlor where you would come, or, you know, even Jewish traditions, they have this today. They're sitting Shiva, right? They're hanging out with the dead. They're not alone. Other parts of the population have kind of washed their hands of it. But with like rising, not to get too like morbid about this stuff, but due to the rising costs, both funeral costs and caring for the deceased and people, there's been a resurgence in home funerals or green funerals, green burials. And that's a very beautiful thing. But even like a basic level cremation is still like $2,500. It's still a huge thing for a family to commit to in an accident, a freak loss. So there's a lot of compounding painful parts of death. And the Boy Scout in me, you know, that was raised in Scouts and wanting to be prepared for something that you know is going to happen. I find that like Buddhists, thinking about death, not only as a concept, but as the closing of a circle. So we don't begin here and end here. We begin here and we go around, and it's a complete thing. So I think of death as more of a holistic, natural, not a terrible thing, even though tragedy happens and tragedy's terrible. But when you're talking about the deceased dog side of the road or something like that, it's like
meditation,
all connected to the circle, you know, of life. And even though this loss over here is maybe putrid and difficult to bear witness to, it's also providing nourishment for this complete world we don't even see with our bare eyes.
That is fascinating. You know, the thing that my mind is going to right now is that for the vast majority of human history, life was brutal and short. Maybe that's a little bit overstated, but for millennia, the majority of people would die before the age of 5. Death was just part of the household, part of life. It's almost unthinkable now. I mean, one of the defining characteristics of modernity is that we've been able to put it in a box and we've been able to stave it off. And that's,
well, we have all these fancy distractions too. Like we're scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. We don't want to see that. Oh, that's terrible. Next swipe.
Yeah, that's right. Mari.
Well, and also these devices, they divorce us from our bodies. So it's hard to even think of yourself as, an organic creature that one day is gonna go back to the earth and no longer be here when your consciousness is like in this other space all the time. It's really hard for us to think about. And I think that's why you see people like the, what is his name? The tech guy who wants to live forever.
Oh yeah, and I can't remember his name, but yeah, he's a
Yeah, but
blood maxing and
yeah, stuff like that is just so
assist.
increasingly common where people, it really feels like maybe because, and I'm, I don't want to diminish anybody's struggles, but because modern life is so comfortable, we have a harder and harder time thinking about the fact that one day it's going to be over.
And that's where I encourage other individuals to spend some time with themselves and the thought about not being here. Not, what would it, what would that look like in
Wow.
other people's lives? Like, or you think about other people in your lives who you love very, very much, and you're like, I could never imagine my life without them. Well, now do that as an exercise, a mental exercise. And then the next time you see that person, tell them how much they matter to you and how much you appreciate them in your life. Letting people know, because we don't know how much time we have.
Amanda.
Exactly. And I think that you said it. Putting yourself in that mental headspace of that person not being there, or even yourself not being there, is extremely uncomfortable, mentally and emotionally, and people just don't do it. And I think then, like you said, you don't know when your journey is going to be over or anybody else's, so you get caught off guard. And I think it can be even more painful, more of a shock. And I think it's really valuable what you're doing as an outlet, because people are so uncomfortable talking about it with the people that they love the most. And so sometimes it's easier to. There's a quote from my uncle, something about you can only drink with close friends and complete strangers. And I feel like that same
Yeah.
thing is like you can only have these conversations with either your close friends or complete strangers because they're really uncomfortable. And I really.
It takes practice, like the first time you do something, you don't know how to do it. How do you have a conversation like that? It's scary. My partner, I've asked her to take pictures of me while I'm sleeping so I can see what that looks like. What do I look like when I'm asleep? And she took one last year right around my birthday, right on my birthday, so I have it, and I shouldn't have this much joy thinking about it, but like I didn't look alive, I looked peaceful, I looked asleep. But it's an interesting exercise to like just take yourself out and in a healthy way, not in a trigger warning 988 helpline sort of way.
988.
Yeah, I'm glad the helpline exists, but
my favorite number.
I'm glad it's there. But not in that kind of a way.
Sure.
However, if we're gonna talk about like end of life care and like having the choice, if you have a debilitating or terminal illness, like I'm glad that there are states that are allowing such decisions to be made between patients and their healthcare providers. Minnesota's thinking about it, but we don't currently have any legislation right now. Thanks for letting me talk about all this, like
That's so good.
because you asked, and I don't really get an
When
outlet
no,
to
it's good. When does the show air?
a very popular Sunday evening time slot at 8 p.m. It's when
That is
community radio is most alive.
a great time slot.
Yeah,
Sunday
it's
evening, because
reflective.
you get the Sunday scaries, and so then you get to think about death with Michael
And it's
when you have
supposed to
your
be like each episode is supposed to end on like a helpful, hopeful kind of thing to leave people thinking about something that's not a tragic thing. Again, it's rooted in both the reality that we are alive and one day we won't be, like these are facts and I accept them as they are, and wanting to be mindful about that for our families and friends so they know what our wishes are, and then they also have access to our voices so they can, you know, hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I also want to point out that you have a business or project called Humans Love Stories, humanslovestories.com, where you provide, you know, master of ceremonies, honoring unique stories from, you know, weddings or company meetings, but you also do legacy preservation. So if you're listening and if you're interested in coming on Michael's show, please reach out to us or him, or also if you're interested in legacy preservation. I think that is something that's really awesome too, as a group of storytellers, really. All artists are storytellers in some way, and I think that's really powerful. Sometimes, like you said, you know, you're in hospice and you're, you know, trying to focus on the moment and be there, and then, you know, this person that you love is passed on, and you know, our memories fade, and it would be nice to have a piece of especially their voice,
laughing, like, you know, I got all of that, those kind of little sound bites. Have you heard of the app 1 second a day? Do you know what this is?
No.
Really?
No.
Oh, come on now. Okay.
No, so Uh-oh, school us now.
This app, it's an older application. So it was popular in the App Store probably a decade ago or more. But it allows you to, you know, use your camera on your phone to record a video, and or any kind of device to record a video. And the app, 1 second a day, will stitch the video to the next day. So you record another video and then another video. And
I have seen this. There's a, okay, it's an app, 1 second video.
1 second every day.
1 second every day.
1 second every day. And I've used this app since 2017 to connect every day with a little video or whatever. And some of the videos that I have of like my grandmother and I hanging ornaments on the tree, you know, like just being silly together and hearing the giggle, hearing that, her voice. So it's, and the app is free. You can pay for the app too if you want. I have the paid version so I can have more videos, you know, a longer video, and then backup as well. But like, I love the ability to go back and look at life and what you were doing and who you were with. And as I've grown into my 40s now, and I no longer drink alcohol, and I have a dog and a house and stuff, like the change in the nightlife and bar culture and partying to, you know, domestic matters has also been kind of interesting. But it, again, it's part of that legacy piece where it's not necessarily something that I want like 100 likes, but I want to be able to go back and see what was happening in the world. So there's like also political stuff on there about things that were happening in our communities and stuff. So it's like a living time capsule, basically. Yeah. So check it out if you haven't.
And I've seen a version of this. I didn't know it was that app, but I've seen a version of this as a new mother saying in the first year of your baby's life, take a 1 second everyday video and then stitch it together, because like those things, giggles, sounds, you know, first words, and
when you see those things, you're transported back to that moment instantly. The smell, the sound, whatever was going on. It's awesome.
Exactly. And you know, this is sort of the opposite of death, right? But you're seeing, you know, how did this person was describing watching a child grow is you're never getting that version of them again, and you can't hold on to it. And so if you can encapsulate it into these videos, as small or as little as it is, you know, that, I mean, that's just beautiful.
these on these videos, there's a family that I play disc golf with, and the youngest boy in the family, he I guess I'm like his funcle, his fun uncle.
Yes.
When he was in the stroller, he was on the disc golf course, and so we've been playing disc golf since he was a baby. And last night, not for the first time, but another time, he has kicked my butt again in this sport that I've been playing for over 20 years. I should be good at it? No. But he's 12 and he's just a rock star. So it's like getting to see, again, he's growing into a young man, and getting to see that is, does not like that. I'm sure that in my mind, I can still see him in the stroller or holding him or whatever, even though his voice is changing now and he's hitting his growth spurt. And it's a trip to see, but it's also really a blessing to get to be close to another family and get to see their loved ones grow. It's cool. Because that stuff matters, you know.
Unk status is what you have. That's a very big deal for a man to have unk status. I want a QR code on my headstone.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%.
I want a QR.
Why are you
QR
laughing?
Code.
What are you? Well, Amanda, why is that funny?
I never thought of that before, but it's actually a really good idea. Album. It could be like a MySpace page.
To your Linktree.
No, I want a QR code to my search history.
Oh.
I'm joking. And Michael, I know you have a show coming up as well.
As a member of the participation squad.
Well, let's
you know what I mean. It's just, not my show.
Let's make sure to hit that too.
I'd love that.
Yeah. So what is that coming up, and where can people find that?
So. In Duluth, Minnesota, on the 13th and 14th, the 12th and the 14th, 12th and 13th. This is why I'm not a numbers guy. I love colors. Numbers are hard. The Friday the 12th in Duluth, the Rubber Chicken Theater Company will be drawing community generated prompts out of a hat. So this is their chicken hat plays. They're playing a day or out of the hat plays. And Friday night, they draw these prompts. And then the writers, I think there are five or six writers, they go off to write their shows. And then on Saturday morning, the 13th, I believe, the cast, many, many people come in, like 30 people, 40 people. I don't know. It's a bunch of folks. And they hand out there are hats. There are more hats with the cast's name. So the casts are drawn out of these hats. You know, we need three women and two men in this show. So then the names are drawn out. And that's how that's selected. And I think the same with the directors as well. But so this is a very complicated way to explain. This is just theater camp. It's like, we're going to make a play in a day, and it's the most fun, like simultaneous low pressure, high pressure kind of day. Like you don't know what you're going to do. You don't know who you're going to be. You don't know who your lines are. You don't know what props you need. You don't know your costumes, nothing. And by the end of the day, all of those decisions will be made, or they're not going to be made, and it's going to be great. And it's, you know how like, you can go to and see improvisation and like have really high expectations and then leave disappointed, you know, like it's improv. Oh, but it wasn't very good. Like this isn't improv. This isn't that. This is like the most supportive audience, because the audience knows that these community members have received their scripts, but mere hours ago, and they have. So you can see them, these performers in the shows, like working. You can see them working. You can see them grabbing for the next line. It's on the tip of their tongue, and it's like it's so it's just the best. It's just the best. It's so much fun to watch because, like, the folks, the people who may not be doing professional work all the time, but still want to come in and participate. And it ranges in age from like teenagers in high school or middle school all the way up to 80 years old and all different levels of experience. But when you see someone, they're struggling, they're trying to get through the line or whatever, and then it comes to them and it's like a gift from God and the brightest light on them. It's such a good feeling. And then they you can feel their sense of pride and accomplishment at the end of the day, and they're like, oh, I've never done that, or I'm not an actor. And but it's like, you solved this problem and you did it creatively and beautifully. So it's a ton of fun. You can learn more at rubberchickentheater.com. There's a dot and then com.net.org.
I'll look it up.
It's on the internet.
It is .com.
It's a commercial.
There you go. Yeah.
Come check it out. The show is so much fun. I've done a bunch of these now, and you know, as theater professionals, how much time it takes to do a show. Like, depending on what you're involved in, it's either like 6 weeks or 8 weeks or a year or whatever. And it's a long time. So to do this in a day or a few hours it's so rewarding. It's just like getting to flex that creativity muscle, getting to make big choices, and like, there's nothing like it except other companies that do things like this. And then it's the same. But this is a ton of fun.
I kind of think of radio as a similar thing, but Mari.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, I've done a couple of these in my life, actually. I've done a couple 48-hour play festivals, a couple 48-hour film festivals, and they are the most fun you like will have making art, because they are truly so low stakes.
Why don't we do it more? Is it just because it involves so many people?
Calories.
Is that what it is?
I think calories. It's just scheduling. There's nothing worse than scheduling. Yeah. Getting everybody together for one weekend. There's nothing worse. But when you do, it is so fun. And if anybody listening is like, I would love to make a film, I would love to do a show, but I don't have the time and I don't know where to start, some kind of 24, 48-hour festival is a great place to start something like the Chicken Hat Place. Yeah. Maybe go see them, see what you're getting into. But I highly recommend doing them. They're so fun.
Yes. And even for experienced actors or more seasoned actors, it's such a great way to revisit turning off that critical person and that like questioning your choices, your gut instinct. It is such a great practice going in and just going with your gut feeling, first choice, strong and wrong. And that's what it is, because there's no time to edit. There's no time to go back and get the second take. Or if you forget your line on stage, you got to fix it with your own brain. And there it is. It's awesome. Yeah. And yet, like you said, I think there's such a so much bigger of a sense of accomplishment at the end of it, because you did it.
Yeah. I had mentioned improv earlier. I don't mean to drag improv at all. I think it's beautiful, beautiful.
This is a safe space, Michael.
I know. I just, you know, I feel I don't want to.
Are you an improver, Michael? From that sort of theater performance? Have you done much improv?
I've done a considerable amount of it, and I'm one of those performers that does not think that improvisation is supposed to be funny. I think it's just theater without a script, you know, right?
True.
So all of a sudden, if you take away the short form game and the wanting to one up or have the closing line, you know, the blackout line, it can be a lot of pressure and take a lot of, it can put you in your head to try to be that on all the time. And for a little while, I had a group that we did. It was it was kind of a dark group. But yes, I do come from a background in improvisation.
Perfect.
Yes.
Well, and you know, we can sort of, you know, we maybe have another 10 minutes max. But maybe it's a good time to sort of talk about your origin story, Michael. How did you get here? Where did you did you study theater? What's your sort of your background? How did you end up in this sort of creative, arena?
That's a very big question, and I will do
You have
the
90
best I
seconds.
can to sign to
No.
keep it concise. Do you ever feel like you can't do anything else? Like, oh, I could go be something else. I don't know that I could do that. I really like not doing other things. No. Background. I've always really liked playing pretend and I like to call it playing pretend or practice playing pretend in the same way that a lawyer has a practice and a doctor who prescribes pills has a practice, and they're gonna practice pumping you full of mind-altering substances, and that's totally fine to call that a practice. I'm gonna practice playing pretend because if they can get better at it, I can get better at it. And when I was in first grade, I told my teacher that I wanted to be Garth Brooks. And this is top of mind because years later, he came to Dudley Riggs, the Brave New Workshop, and he told the other people I was working with at the time in the front of house that that's what I wanted to do with my life is be Garth Brooks. And he wanted to know how it was going. Of course, when you're in first grade, your sensibilities change when you're in your 20s. But yeah, I always wanted to do theater and be using my voice. And my parents thought, and my neighbors and grandparents thought that growing up I was going to be a lawyer because I like to argue. But it's not that I like to argue, it's that I'm a deep well of emotion. I'm a Scorpio moon. You were talking about woo-woo stuff. Well, it's the full moon now, and I'm a Scorpio moon, and I'm a Cancer too. So it's like, look out.
I'm
So I
a fellow
wanted to find.
Scorpio moon. It gets dark in there.
It does. It really does. So the funeral music show is a good outlet for me. And wanting to utilize the emotions that I have, I was going to therapy, trying to figure out what's going on. Why do I have these big emotions? I'm just a sensitive person, and being able to put those sensitivities and those feelings into either sharing the story of a couple who's wanting to get married and as their wedding officiant, or the story of someone who's just passed as their funeral celebrant. It's all kind of connected to that same wanting to use my voice to share stories with other people. And some of those stories can be really difficult to tell. Years ago, I played the cop who beat up a young black boy in the show based on the book All American Boys at Stages Theater. And we did the show in North Minneapolis shortly after George Floyd had been murdered. And that show was so difficult for all of us to do, but we knew how important it was to do. And a common theme for myself was reminding myself that I need to be strong enough to tell this story for other people, because it was difficult to wrap my mind around being this character, this person, and still wanting to also try to find the humanity in that guy. Who's this guy? So it's the practice though, dates and times. My first show in the Twin Cities was in 2001 when I was a high schooler at Stepping Stone Theater for Youth
Good
Development.
Lord, let's go back to
Yeah.
2001. Keep going.
We had our first cast meeting like 2 or 3 days before 9/11, and then 9/11 happened. And because of the I grew up in Watertown, a small town west of the Twin Cities. So I was driving in every day in rush hour into the city to rehearse in St. Paul at a high school in Montreal and Snelling. I mean, it was a crazy time. It was a very difficult time. But when you think about being a millennial, which I think all of us on this call are probably all millennials.
I don't know. Mari's a,
I'm a cuss. I think
what Mari's are you are, born?
Mari's 99. Our Zoomer whisperer.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah. No, she translates for us frequently. Mari speaks Tumblr.
Hold on now. Tumblr. I'm on Tumblr.
Okay.
Tumblr is for children of all ages, but
yes.
Yeah, it's always fascinating. I always really love hearing people's 9/11 stories because I was two. I don't remember. My mom told me where I was, but
wow.
What's a Tumblr?
It's one step up from a cheerleader.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, I got started doing youth theater as a youth. And I really love the idea of being able to use the art that you're passionate about to connect with other people. So working with youth theater, youth development has been big. And then also have you ever been done any sort of de-escalation work? There are like a handful of companies in the Twin Cities that do that. And I've done that. I did that for a few years, and that was really, really rewarding, but frustrating and heartbreaking for a lot of different reasons.
What is de-escalation work?
So de-escalation work involves taking an intense situation that is of a high level of intensity with someone who is in a mental health crisis, and naturally and without the use of force or restraints or chemicals, naturally de-escalating a situation with this individual through conversation, through trust and vulnerability and empathizing with someone who's having maybe the worst day of their life, or maybe someone who's ill. Maybe they haven't received their medication. They haven't eaten today. You know, their blood sugar is low, or they could be a veteran who's just come back and they were triggered by some other nonsense in the neighborhood. So like de-escalation is at its core, just being with someone and helping them naturally come back to level, basically.
Yeah, if you're listening, I would encourage you. Sometimes they open these de-escalation classes with actors or mentors to the civilians or to kind of normies, as we call you, and practice. And it can be with different kinds of people. And the actors will, you know, simulate these scenarios and then help you instead of getting that fight or flight response, kind of pushing through that to be able to de-escalate the situation. And one of the companies that I interned with for my third year in grad school was called the Irondale Ensemble in Brooklyn, New York. And they had a foundation in improv. And so all of their work kind of stemmed from there, whether it was improv, including in Shakespeare play or anything like that. And they used to host civilian and police force members and run through different scenarios mm-hmm. about what could happen, what's going to happen, what you're going to hear, what they're going to say to you. And I think that was just really helpful for the community. So if you have a chance to observe or participate in those, I highly recommend it.
And I think it's also interesting, the other side of it, you know, both as a performer in those scenarios, it's also you get to see what's going on with that first responder, whether it's a police officer, firefighter, EMT, you know, security officer. And ultimately you want them to be able to go home at the end of the night. That's at the end of their call. They want to go home to their family. This is their job, you know, like they need to be safe. And so I have a lot of empathy for the first responders who are out on the beat and doing the job to the best of their ability and to the letter of the law, because without that, it's a madhouse in the world.
We have got to close. And
I'm glad we found a happy,
Michael,
happy subject.
Yeah, we've
talk more about death, please.
Run the gamut here. It's been a joy. We've talked about Chicken Hat plays. We've talked about death. We've talked about Viking funerals. Lots of different things. Michael, just hit your plugs. Where do you want people to go?
Oh, goodness
Yeah.
gracious. That's the one thing I really struggle with is the marketing piece of it. As a former healthcare
90.
marketer, oh,
Yep.
it's tough. If you're interested, go back, listen to the episode, and find that key details. It's in there.
Yeah,
It's in
it's in
there.
there. Yeah, we plugged it. Yeah,
Come check it
94.1
out. Yeah.
Frogtown Radio.
If you're listening now, it's
Yeah.
you're probably listening
Yeah.
on the radio.
There you go. Or it's, it's a podcast
You
too.
found us.
And we're at badmouthtc@gmail.com. I'm Kevin Kautzman, and we got to close this out for time. This has been a real pleasure, Michael Linsky. Thank you so much. Just a real treat. And we went deep.
Thanks for letting me
We
tickle
went
your noodles.
deep. All right. The
Deep into
crying
the
time.
Scorpio moon.
Yeah,
Yeah, the crying
sparkling there.
time.
Mari's right.